What is up, guys? Welcome to this podcast. My name is Saul Monnelly at Saul Monnelly NBA on Twitter. Here, joined by Ben Dubose of USA Today Sports. Ben, how are you doing?
Doing well, Solomon. Ready for the draft and free agency. It's June is here. It's not far away.
Yeah. It's making me nervous. So, as I texted you when we were arranging the podcast, there's a reason I wanted you specifically on the show this week, and you probably already guessed what this is about.
Oh yeah.
I do want to back up and kind of ask you the question I asked you last week, last time I had you on the show, excuse me. What percent chance do you think James Harden actually returns to Houston this summer?
I'm up to 75%. I'm higher than I was last time, simply because the way Philadelphia went out, the comments since by Daryl Morey, the fact that he acknowledged both scenario A and scenario B, as he called it in the postseason press conference, I thought that was telling, because Daryl is someone who historically has always at least projected superficially a lot of confidence in terms of his negotiating position. For him to acknowledge the possibility that Harden might not return, and the fact that we're now within a month of free agency, and there still has not been a credible report linking Harden to anywhere other than Houston. Solomon, I've never seen a situation like this with a highly desired free agent of that stature where it feels this overwhelming, other than LeBron and the Lakers in 2018, at this stage in the game. Even people in Philly, like Keith Pompey, longtime beat writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer, very respected, he's basically their version of Jonathan Fagan, has written multiple times that Harden is expected to sign with the Houston Rockets. I have never seen this much intel pointing in one direction other than, I think, LeBron with the Lakers, when we're talking about a free agent going to a team that is not his own. So at this point, while I don't think it's a given, I don't think the Rockets want to hand over a four-year max. Now, I'm not going to say there's no world where they would. I'm sure we'll get into that. So I am leaving the door open that they can't agree on terms, and that maybe Philadelphia caves at the last minute, because it's not like, at least immediately, they can replace Harden. It's not like they would have more cap room. So I'm leaving the door open, say 25%, that something happens, the stars don't align, and all the intel is wrong. But at this point, with us being within a month of the start of free agency, which is June 30th, and for all the intel to point in one direction, and even people in Harden's own market of Philadelphia seemingly believing that he's headed to the Rockets, at this point, I think you've got to be more than 50-50, which is what I was the last time we did a pod a month or two ago.
Yeah, I am surprised, like, the amount of leaks, or I'm not even sure if it's leaks. Like, it seems like a lot of this is league people speculating. Like, I'm surprised that hasn't tamped down since Harden finally got an agent. Like, I thought I was expecting that to, you know, slow down, and it still doesn't appear to have done so. But yeah, I'm kind of with you in that you kind of have to be over 50%.
Yeah,
right? Just more because likely the volume, right? Yeah, just the volume. Like, I'm at 55 to 60. I'm kind of right there. I think what's persuaded me is the Keith Pompey article was,
yes,
you know, you pointed that out. That was definitely the biggest one, but also just you're right. The contingency planning that Philadelphia seems to be doing, the hedging that they seem to be having in press conferences. I think some of that is like Nick Nurse. I think that was a little bit overblown. I think that was just him being uncertain. Right, like I think that was like him.
And that's in a no-win situation for him as a head coach. Yeah. What can he possibly say? That decision is above his pay grade. But I will say the overall hiring of Nurse does fit into what I think is Philadelphia's posture to this point, which is that we do want him back, but there are limits. It's not like Daryl Morey is willing to just give him the keys and do whatever it takes financially or otherwise to retain James Harden. If that was the case, I think you just hire Mike D'Antoni, which Ramona Shelburne went on NBA Today the day after Doc Rivers got dismissed, and she made the case for Philadelphia to do just that. They didn't. Nick Nurse is a hire. While I don't think it's necessarily saying that they expect Harden to leave, there is a world where they could work together. At the same time, Nick Nurse is also someone who we've seen the last few years in Toronto. He makes sense in a world where a team does lose a star. We saw the Raptors keep going at it even after losing Kawhi Leonard in 2019. Nick Nurse is very much a coach that's going to try to make the best of a veteran supporting cast, which is what, well, the Sixers are going to have that with or without Harden, let's be honest, and just building around Joel Embiid and trying to make the most of the situation. And when I did Locked on Rockets with Jackson Gatlin last week, I called it, you know, MacGyvering. That's something that Nick Nurse is really good at, and it could fit in a post-James Harden world for the Sixers. While I don't think that them hiring Nurse says that they are out on Harden, I think that is way too much. I do think it's yet another piece of evidence that suggests that they're not just going to give James Harden a blank check and say, hey, however much money you want, however much control of the franchise you want, transactions, roster moves, you name it, this is not going to be like 2019 in Houston. There are limits. This is not a situation where we're going to give you whatever years, whatever money, whatever coach you want. No, there are limits. And if there are limits, then I think it feeds into the larger narrative, which is that all the smoke pointing towards Houston is there for a reason. If the money is close, I do think he would pick Houston. And at this point, my gut tells me that the money is going to be close because it just doesn't feel like Philly is willing to make that Godfather type offer that Harden is looking for.
Yeah. On the coaching front hire point with Philadelphia, it did feel like firing Doc was a way to signal that they were interested in keeping James. And maybe something's changed, yep. But, you know, because, like, you know, Joel liked Doc. So, like, if you're viewing him as the sun, moon, and earth, which I think that's what they're doing there in Philadelphia, which you should be doing, you would think that firing Doc would be a no-go, but obviously that wasn't the case. And then, you know, Mike D'Antoni gets introduced in the process, the hiring process, and then they go with Nurse. And I think this is what I genuinely think Daryl made the hire that he thought was best for his franchise, right? I think that's what he thought. I think he thought Nick Nurse was the best guy for the job. I don't think he was, you know, as you said, I don't think he was trying to send a message to James or anything. But, like, I think what happened there was, first of all, like, there's no evidence to suggest that James doesn't want to be coached hard. Like, this idea that,
that's overblown.
I hate that. Like, this idea that James wouldn't be okay with any other coach but Mike D'Antoni. Like, what have we seen to suggest that other than that he's played for Mike D'Antoni? Like, that's it. Like, he played for Mike D'Antoni, that must be the only coach that he likes. Like, that's the logic there? I don't get it. But you're right. Like, I do think it's tipped Houston's way for sure, at least in the past month. And the last question before we get into what I really wanted to talk about today, so I asked you a variation of this question before we started recording, and you kind of hinted at it, but I'll ask it again. Is there a universe in which you'd give James Harden a 4-year max contract this summer?
There is, but it's a very limited one, and it's one that I don't expect to actually be reality. So the way I look at it, and I guess this is going to be a little bit of a complicated answer, so I want to back up by explaining why I'm so interested in James Harden in the first place. I'm a big believer in general in the NBA that quality trumps quantity. And we hear a lot of juice on Twitter, the anti-Harden crowd talking about, instead of spending, you know, $45 million or $50 in average annual value on Harden, and then you have one other guy, maybe $15, $20 million that you can sign with your cap space this summer, and then the room exception, spread the wealth. I don't think what the Rockets need is more role players. I think actually that's something that Raphael Stone, his administration, has done a pretty good job of acquiring on the cheap with fairly limited resources. KJ Martin, Jay Sean Tate, Kevin Porter Jr., these are all low contracts or second round picks. Even Tari Eason, that's a mid to late first round pick. It's not like any of those guys you acquired giving up a ton of assets. And yet I feel pretty confident, Solomon, if you place those types of players on playoff teams, they would be getting hyped up much the same way. And I'm not trying to talk down on, let's use Bruce Brown as an example. I do like Bruce Brown, and I do think they should look at him as a 3-and-D wing. In fact, I expect them to. But is it really that different than if, say, Jayshon Tate was in that situation flanked by that type of supporting cast? Hell, you can look at the Warriors and Jordan Poole, who signed for 4 years, $140 million before the season. Would it really be that different if you inserted Kevin Porter Jr. into that configuration? Maybe a little bit, but I don't think drastically. My point is that with role players, so much is situational. And quite frankly, the Rockets already have a bit of a rotation crunch as it is. You have your five starters that ended last year that are all 23 years old or younger. You've got Tari Eason, Jayshon Tate, and the number four overall pick, assuming you keep it, you're definitely going to put that guy in your rotation next year. You're not going to G League a guy you draft fourth overall. Let's be real. Worst case, that guy is playing 15 to 20 minutes off the bench. That's eight guys already before we even start talking about the free agency options. So with that in mind, I just sort of push back on this narrative that, well, you know, instead of going after a top-end talent like Harden, just spread the wealth. That seems to be more prominent. And some people say, well, you need more tradable salary. I don't even necessarily agree with that. You've already got a lot of tradable salary between Porter and Tate, and you'd be able to sign one more salary of significance even with Harden this summer with the cap room that you have. So I just sort of dismiss the overall framework of going against Harden. People saying, oh, you know, it's not wise to put all your eggs in one basket. I sort of disagree. You've got a lot of depth already, and Rafael Stone has shown an ability to get depth without surrendering a ton of resources, be it financial, draft, etc. So I push back on the overall framework of that. I'm not married to James Harden, for example, and I'm not endorsing this. I want to say this up front before I use this analogy, but you could try to talk me into Kyrie Irving if he was open to coming to Houston. There's just a couple of things. Number one, I don't think he's open to coming to Houston. And two, I am concerned about his baggage and some of the off-court factors there. But the point is, I'm open to an argument against Harden if it's another high-end type talent. To me, that's what this team needs. They've already got role players that, in my opinion, would look pretty good if they had the right central piece or pieces. The difficulty is in finding the straw that stirs the drink, not finding more guys in that Jay Sean Tate, KJ Martin, Tari Eason tier. So that's why I'm sort of interested in Harden to begin with. Now, in terms of the max, I would absolutely give it to him the next 2 years. Look, you're at a point now where a lot of your rotation is playing for artificially small numbers because they're on their first NBA contracts. So Jalen Green, Jabari Smith Jr., Alper and Şengün, whoever you draft it for this year, that applies to them. Next couple of years, that's going to be before any extension kicks in, even for the first crop of Jalen and Şengün. Who are you going to be giving that money to if it's not James Harden? I don't want to save it just for the sake of Tillman Fertitta's trust fund. And there's only so many guys. People say, oh, you know, you can sign Harden and then all you've got is one more, you know, say $15 million a year player and then the room exception. Okay, well, that's adding three guys to the eight rotation players you already have. How many more do you need going into this season? So I think for the next 2 years, you can easily give Harden the max, and it's not going to harm you in any way. And these are years that you're not trying to win a title anyway. With the third year, this is where it gets tricky, because it's that third year that extensions for Jalen and Şengün would kick in. That's with the 2025 to 26 season. And then you'd have to be negotiating your extensions for Jabari and Tari as well. Now, I do think a three-year deal is doable, because I'm a big believer that in the NBA, it doesn't matter how big the contract is. If a guy is expiring, it's not going to be especially negative. You can use it as, you know, matching filler for trades. You can offload it with, you know, minimal draft picks attached without having to. You can even waive and stretch it if you need to. There's not that much of a premium if a guy is in his expiring year. So if you give him a three-year deal, again, I don't think the first 2 years really matter that much at all. And then the third, if he's expiring, it's really not going to be that difficult to offload it if you find yourself in a financial crunch. It's the fourth year where it gets really, really tricky, because that would be the second year of Jalen and Şengün's extensions, the first year of Jabari and Tari, and in that preceding third year, he would not be an expiring. So if you wanted to offload him for financial reasons, then you would probably have to attach significant sweetener. It might be, you know, if he ages poorly and he'd be 36 by then, it might be analogous to, you know, Russell Westbrook or John Wall a couple of years ago. It could be pretty bad. And so I could see the Rockets really pushing back on giving a four-year max for that reason. Now, with that said, the world that I would be open to it, and again, I don't expect this to happen, but I want to circle back to the initial comment. If Tillman Fertitta was truly willing, and it wouldn't be long-term, just for a couple of years, to go to Steve Ballmer lengths, say the type of spending you see from the Clippers or the Warriors or the Nets, and say, screw it, I'm willing to eat the last year or two of the James Harden mega contract that you give him this summer and not have it affect what I do with, you know, extending Jalen and Shingun and Jabari and Tari, your current young core, or spending your mid-level exception money to further add to that team, or trading assets to ditch Harden's contract. If you could tell me that for a couple of years, Tillman Fertitta would literally eat that money without any team-building consequences to the Rockets in terms of who they extend, do they spend their mid-level, can they keep all their draft picks without having to offload salary? If Tillman Fertitta was willing to spend at that level, then yeah, I would give the four-year max because I don't think it's really going to be all that restrictive in a team-building sense. Again, it's not like you'd be needing to extend Harden beyond this current contract, so it would be rolling off. And by the way, I should also mention in terms of team-building, you know, I mentioned earlier why I'm open to Harden in terms of quality over quantity. I also think that, you know, by the time we get to the 2025 and beyond window, the hope is that Harden is a bridge. The hope is that Harden is a temporary sort of stopgap while guys like Jalen Green and Al Pi are developing the same way we've seen Chris Paul in Oklahoma City and Phoenix the last few years playing alongside Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Devin Booker. And by the time Chris Paul leaves those situations, those guys are much more ready to take on larger roles. And then at that point, they are the central pieces of what those teams hope to turn into a contender. That's what you're hoping for with the Rockets. I know with the Thunder, it's been a bit more prolonged. But the point is, you're hoping that by the time Harden ages out, the way we're starting to see with Chris Paul or moves on to another team, whatever it may be, that your internal guys are ready to take the next step. That is the hope, that by the mid to late 2020s, you won't necessarily need an external free agent like James Harden or anybody else you could get this summer, that you could just turn over the keys. And by that point, Jalen, Alpi, Jabari, they can be the foundation, maybe Amen Thompson, of a contender in and of themselves, that they can take the baton and be those guys. However, if they aren't, I'm a big believer, Salman, that if you're not going to get the alpha, or maybe alphas plural, of a championship team with who you have in place with this recent window, 2021 to 2023 of draft picks, you're probably going to have to do it via the trade market. Because the reality, the guys that make it to free agency, and this is one of the pushbacks I've seen against, you know, Harden. Oh, if you give him a 3 or 4 year deal, then what if you, you know, want to have flexibility down the line for another star free agent? Number one, it's going to be really tough to thread the needle anyway. Not impossible, but to thread the needle, get, you know, open up max cap space again in a landscape where you're going to have to give extensions to Jalen and Shingun and Jabari, as we've been talking about. But I also think that you have to ask yourself this question. Who is actually going to make it to the free agent market in 2024 or 2025 or 2026? Who are you saving your money for? Because, you know, people will push back on guys like Harden and Kyrie. Well, those are the guys who make it in terms of legitimate star-level players to free agency. They're flawed in some way. In this case, it's a combination of their ages and some off-court concerns. The guys that are, you know, let's say perfect age alignment in their late 20s, they don't make it to free agency. If they're not happy, they're so valuable, their teams push for a resolution a year or two before so that they can trade them rather than lose them for zero compensation. So that's another reason why, you know, I'd be open in a theoretical sense to giving Harden a 4-year max, because I don't really see this utopian scenario where you maintain flexibility and then even if Jalen, Jabari, those guys don't develop, then you can give the max in 2 or 3 years to somebody else who can be your alpha for a contender. I don't see that guy hitting the market. And if he does hit the market, what are the odds that he's interested in Houston? There's just so many ifs. I think the very likely scenario is that if by the middle to late part of this decade, if Jalen, Shingun, if these internal guys don't develop into the alpha on a contender, whether you have flexibility or not, you're going to have to trade for that guy externally. And at that point, it just comes down to matching salary and assets. And I do think the Rockets have matching salary because, again, we're talking about extending a lot of these guys. And they would have salaries that are easy to move. And hopefully they're desirable players in their mid-20s that other teams could see if they're offloading a star. So with that in mind, I do think if money was no object and you could convince me that Tillman Fertitta was willing to eat the money, even in a worst-case scenario where Harden isn't really good anymore, I don't think there would actually be that many direct team-building consequences. Because, again, it's not like you'd be expecting anything from Harden after his current contract rolls off the books. However, in reality, I just look. We've done an episode on Tillman before. I'm higher on Tillman Fertitta than a lot of people in this fan base. I think you could make an argument that he's a top 10 owner. I don't think you can make an argument that he's Steve Ballmer or anything like that. And that's what it would require to give Harden a 4-year max and believe that he would truly pay whatever taxes, even in a short-term scenario, are required to keep that group together and not diminish your stockpile of future assets in terms of, you know, letting some of your guys go because you won't extend them, or, you know, packaging future draft picks to offload salaries the way, you know, we saw them do with Ryan Anderson the last time they had a contender, effectively giving up 2 first-round picks, well, a future first and DeAnthony Melton, who had first-round pick value at that point. Yeah, it's just tough for me to imagine. So, yeah, my answer to you, and I know I've gone on for a while, I just wanted to paint, you know, a full picture, because I think there's a lot going on with that question. In an absolutely perfect world, I would be open to giving Harden a 4-year max if you could guarantee me that Tillman was willing to spend whatever it takes to keep that group together, because I do think they have the tools. You know, if you need more role players, the mid-level is going to be under this CBA, the mid-levels, and, you know, as payrolls explode with revenues going up, the mid-level is going to be about $15 million a year pretty soon. You can get role players through the mid-level. You have the tools through bird rights to extend your young core. If you were willing to spend at an unlimited amount, you could absolutely give Harden a 4-year max, and I don't think it would really diminish your long-term puzzle all that much. However, in reality, where Tillman's a good but not great owner, and he's willing to spend at a, you know, decent but not insane level, then I think that fourth year would be really prohibitive when it comes to, you know, some the trade-offs that would accompany that by the time you get to the middle part of this decade and, you know, losing either draft assets, young players, whatever it may be, to help finance that contract. And so for me, assuming Tillman is in the range that I think he is, which is probably, you know, somewhere I'd say 6 to 12 in terms of owners, you know, willingness to spend in the league, then to me that fourth year is a bridge too far, not because of what it would technically do in a CBA sense, but what, in a practical sense, it would let you do, it would force you to do just because of the spending. So I would try everything to avoid a fourth year. My ideal scenario is 2+1, or maybe a 2+1+1, something similar to what Phoenix has actually done with Chris Paul the last few years. But yeah, my main priority would be to try and do everything you can not to give him 4 guaranteed years.
So, first, let me say I am not open to Kyrie. Just off the top, like that's the one guy. Like, I'm normally pretty cold and calculating about stars, and like normally, like no matter what your faults, like I'm not like I will go after you if I'm a you know a GM. But Kyrie's just a different can of worms, and I'm not willing to go there.
I'm with you. I was just saying that from a basketball only sense, that's the kind of scenario that you could at least make the argument for. But again, I wouldn't go there based on the off court. And again, the larger point with that is just, you know, people just tend to overestimate flexibility. People look at the future free agent list for like 2024, 2025, and they say, oh, you know, if we save our money, if we don't spend big, if we either don't spend it or sign guys to short-term deals or guys that are easier to move, then we can get back in the game for so-and-so. Well, the thing is, the guys with no flaws, be it age or off-court, they don't make it to unrestricted free agency. The guys that do have some baggage probably comparable to James or Kyrie. And so that was the larger point I was going to there is that if you're pushing it off, the odds are we're just having the same conversation a year or two from now, just with different players instead of James and Kyrie.
Yeah. And you know, talking about the core, you know, Tari, Jabari, Shangun Green, like I want to make this point because, you know, people are just like, you know, future booking this as like their roster, right? Like first of all, not all these guys are going to be stars. Far from it. Like, more than likely, maybe one or two of these guys will be stars, right? And that's, like, the best case scenario. Not all will make it to free agency. As you said, like, not all are going to be on the team in 2 years. Not all are going to be in the league in 3 years, right? Like, so many of these guys wash out. So many of these guys don't hit their highest ceiling. And the Rockets are going to have to make trades. Like, so this, if any Rockets fan that's, you know, planning out the roster with everybody in mind, like, that's just not going to happen. It's just not practical. So going back to the role players versus Harden thing, like, I've talked about this before. This never works out. This collection of role players versus the star, the star always wins in valuation, always. In every practical sense, even the tradable salary sense. Like, first of all, let's start here. this summer, there is one or two star players, meaning every role player on the market is going to be highly sought after and likely overpaid. So you're not going to get tradable salary from role players, like for the, at least the best role players. Like right off the bat, if you're planning on spending your cap space on those guys, you're not going to get good valuation from that, right? Yep. Harden is likely going to be more tradable than that in all likelihood, just because like if you're spending like $20 million on role player X, like, I'm sorry, that's just not that appetizing, right? Role players are going to be overpaid this summer. But in a historical sense, that package of role players in on-court value just never super succeeds the star. The star always wins. Like this is why teams do everything in their power to keep stars when they have them. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't care about the space that may come if the star leaves. They don't care about it because they know that this league is different. Like that space is just better suited to be occupied by a star. So as I've said on this podcast before, like, I'm on the same page as you. But there's, you know, less qualifiers with me. Like, there is a qualifier though. If I'm Rafael Stone and Harden's representation isn't receptive to a team friendly deal that I offer him first, mm-hmm. I'm not letting a 4-year max be the difference between having James Harden and not having James Harden. That's kind of my baseline position.
Yeah, I'll disagree with you there simply because I do think, especially with the new CBA, you would be looking at some significant roster harm in the mid to late 2020s window in terms of who you would have to offload or potentially lose by not extending them once they become free agents, or the draft picks that you would have to attach to Harden. Well,
that's kind of what I wanted to get to.
Okay.
So, like, this is kind of the reason I brought you on the show. Like, I was editing my podcast last week, and as it happens on, like, every show I've done the past few months, James Harden came up on the show, right?
Yeah.
And I was talking with me and Rafael Barlow, mm-hmm. and I was watching myself speak through this small window while I was editing, right?
Yep.
And the thought that went through my head is, dude, you are so full of shit right now. Because in that part of the podcast, I was going through my whole spiel about how Harden's simply going to be this table setter for the group, and how mm-hmm. he was going to have to play much differently in Houston. And it hit me. No part of me actually buys that he's going to take some backseat in Houston. Intellectually, I know that he's still too good to be at that stage of his career. And at this stage in his career, he's still going to be a major cog. But for some reason, I'd convinced myself that he's not going to be a major cog in what Houston tries to do going forward. And then I had another epiphany. For the past couple months, everyone in this space of ours, and I'm guilty of it too, has been having this nuanced conversation about if Harden is worth the 4-year max or not, right? Or would he even be willing to accept anything less of such a deal? And fundamentally, here's what I think. Take all the nuance out of it. Forget about all the cute little 1+1s and the 2+1s and the 3+1s, the team options and the non-guarantees, all that. Take all that away. I think the real question we're avoiding when we have those conversations is, do you still believe in James Harden? Right? Like, I think, and the reason I say that is because I personally believe if you really do have like this full-throated belief in this guy being one of the key pieces moving forward, you know, to take you to the promised land, this isn't a conversation, right? If you have that belief, if you believe that he's going to be worth the full max for the entirety of that contract, this wouldn't be a debate. If you think he's reasonably takes care of his body, or that there's not that much evidence that he's declining swiftly enough to not give him a full max, then again, like, this is not a conversation. Like, this is what I think, right? I think he's still an amazing passer. The guy led the league in assists last year with 11 per game. He can still score the basketball. He averaged 21 points per game last season alongside the leading scorer in the league in Joel Embiid. And he's still crazy efficient. For his entire career at Houston, he had a true shooting percentage of 61.2. Last season, he had a true shooting percentage of 60.7. That's barely a drop off, if anything. So when you really think about it, the biggest reason the scoring numbers are down, in my opinion, are because he took a backseat to the MVP of the league, which you're supposed to do, which I think was the right call. And the reason he's sometimes had trouble getting past defenders is this guy has been plagued by some brutally significant lower body injuries, like his hamstring, his Achilles. Yep. And no one talked about this stuff until he did that interview with Chris Haynes last summer. So I say all that to say this. I still think the guy's an all NBA player. And I think if you're prone to add all these qualifiers about his contract, I think what's really going on is you're just not 100% like in on him anymore in being like a major cog on a championship team. And I don't blame anyone for feeling that way, by the way. Some of the playoff stuff is, well, like, just let me finish this real quick. Like, cause I don't mean to disparage anybody when I say that. Like, some of the playoff stuff is real. Like, at this point, I think we can all agree that there's something mentally that happens with him when his team gets the wind knocks out of their sails, right? Mm-hmm. And in a playoff series, especially when he's playing a team that's better than him, right? Like, he just doesn't, when adversity strikes in that kind of a series, something mentally happens with him. And I don't know what it is that's in me that's willing to overlook all that. Maybe it's just that I don't see anything else being a better use of cap space than Harden this summer. Maybe it's just like Stockholm syndrome. Maybe it's like my fandom. Like, maybe I'm delusional. I don't know. Maybe like, I'm sure a lot of people listening to this think I'm delusional or that I'm crazy, right?
Yeah.
But I think this all comes down to my fundamental belief that I think this guy is one of the 25 greatest basketball players of all time. And I still think he can be part of a title team.
Yeah.
And I think by an age four of that contract, I think he's going to be fine. Like, I'm not ready to quit on him. The reason I'm willing to go for that fourth year on his contract is because I don't think that fourth year is going to be troublesome. I don't think you're going to be in a position where you're going to have to dump him. I think he's still going to be awesome.
Maybe.
Like, that's my fundamental belief, right? And like, if you're of the belief that he's going to be very difficult to move, you like, I think that comes from like, you don't think he's aging, you know, the right way right now, or you think he's not going to age like the way I think he's gonna age, right? And that's kind of where I think. Like, I think fundamentally, if you're adding any sort of qualifier, right? Like, even the qualifiers that I was adding before, like, I was guilty of adding like he's just gonna be a table setter. If you're adding any sort of qualifier, I think this stems from like a belief that he is not that guy anymore. Right. Or that he can't be that guy anymore for the duration of this contract. I think that's just what I think. What say you?
I think that's largely fair. However, I will say, for starters, the baseline of the team he would be joining, to me, it does matter. If the Rockets were anything close to 500 this year and not 22-60, then I'd be much more open to those arguments. I would just say that when it comes to the fourth year, it's not just about the player in a vacuum. It's also about historic aging patterns. And there's a lot of guys who, when you compare their age 34 to age 37, it is dramatically different. Now, sports science is improving these days. Look at LeBron James. Look at Kevin Durant, who seem to be aging fairly well. Maybe James. Yeah. It's possible. Yes. Mm-hmm. But one reason why I've sort of gotten a little more skittish about the fourth year, it's a combination of, one, the Rockets are so far away that it's not like, you know, you can be a title contender the next year or two no matter what you do. And then by year three, year four, the fact that he has had these repeated issues with the Achilles and the the hamstring, that gives me a little bit of pause. If you could tell me for sure that his body was going to hold up and that he would just be going through normal, you know, if you could tell me for sure he's going to go through, be able to play 70 games a year and it would just be normal age declines, then yeah, I'd be more open to it. But I am a little bit more afraid of the scenario in which, you know, he has a Kobe Bryant type moment with the Achilles, and then all of a sudden it's just dramatically different for a number of reasons from that point forward. And with there not being the upside for the Rockets of those first 2 years, that's part of the calculus as well, is that, you know, there's always that risk with a guy of his age giving a 34-year-old that type of contract. But in some ways, the first couple of years, the upside is so much that you're willing to trade off the latter couple of years and the risk of, again, that Kobe Achilles type moment. Because the first couple of years, you feel like this guy gives you a legit chance at a championship, which I don't think is the case here. With that said, where I thought you made a really compelling point, and I do want to sort of highlight this, there is part of me, and I suspect this is true of anyone, where for various reasons, social media, even amongst Rockets fans is not very friendly to Harden. Despite what he's given to this franchise, I would wager it feels like two-thirds to three-quarters of fans are against it. And I think a lot of the reasons are short-sighted and emotional, but the reality is that definitely the majority of the fan base, based on my interactions, is not supportive at this time.
I do want to stop on that because I ran a poll before this, and okay. It seems like
I saw that. I was a little surprised.
Yeah. So obviously our followers are not the same as general Rockets fans, right? Like Twitter This is the diehards, right? Like the people that follow us, these are the diehard Rockets fans, right? These are a different class, right? They seem to be split 50-50.
Okay.
And so I'm actually very curious to hear what you think. So like when you do this job, like you get asked questions by family, friends about the Rockets all the time, right?
Sure. Yep.
And sometimes the questions are different depending on the sometimes they're super specific. Sometimes it's like vague. It's like, how about them Rockets? Sometimes it's like, like
not the lesser specific. Years.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like this summer where it's like everywhere I go, I get asked,
same.
What's going on with James? Right. Same. Like, is he going to come back? And when I have those conversations, there's a tinge of excitement there. And I feel I'm not sure, like, again, this is completely subjective. We're getting into a weird territory, but this is the point of the podcast, right? I feel like there are the Rockets fans in everyday life that I interact with want him back. And but there is a tinge of like, it's there. Well, and that exists. I think that exists with the fan base. I actually think the broader like Rockets fans, I would say it's probably like 60%. And perhaps. I would say online it's more divided.
And I will say there is something to the phenomenon of a vocal minority. We see this in politics a lot, but quite frankly, this feels like politics because it's so emotionally charged based on the baggage of, you know, his 8 years in Houston and of course the way he forced his way out of town a couple of years ago. The vocal minority phenomenon is basically that, you know, the minority is just so opposed, or I guess it can also be in support of, but that basically the minority that is on the other side just doesn't think that it's worth it to openly support it. So they just sort of let the other people scream because they say, hey, you know, it's not worth the drama, the arguments, whatever. We don't agree with this minority that, or the majority, I should say. Sorry, I got the metaphor wrong there. The vocal minority is so loud and so disparaging because they're so emotionally charged about the issue that the silent majority just sort of goes along with it. And even though they disagree, it's just not worth picking the fight. And that could be a phenomenon here. For example, if you go to YouTube and look at the Locked On Rockets I've done lately with Jackson Gatlin, anytime we do a Harden pod, oh my God, the comments are overwhelmingly negative. But I think it's also that the people who are opposed to it are much more likely to express their negativity than the people that are in support of it are willing to go the other direction and deal with, I suppose, the pushback that comes from being pro-Harden. Especially because, look, there is something to be said for his age no matter what. And it's like, that's always, you know, he is older. It's not like he's going to bring you a championship no matter what, in all likelihood. So at some point, it's just sort of like, hey, even if I support it, it's not really worth it because they're just going to fall back on, you know, we know what their arguments are. We know, of course, how emotionally charged it is. And so sometimes the silent majority, you know, the sentiment basically of social media or a comment section is not necessarily reflective of the broader fan base. It's just some people may choose not to participate because it's just not worth it. Now, where I do want to circle back to is your comment about, and I think this is absolutely valid, about on some level, it reflects your underlying belief in James Harden. Yes, there is something to that. Because some of the reason I go to the contract, it's that, at least on social media, I know how emotionally charged these people are. I just want to avoid the conversation about the playoffs. And is he the guy in a high-leverage playoff situation? And so it's easy in a social media world to sort of say, hey, let's throw this out the window because the Rockets aren't trying to win a championship these next 2 years anyway. So let's just dismiss it and not even talk about that angle. And at that point we say, hey, would you be open to it on a 1 or 2 year deal where there's no commitment into the window where you're conceivably trying to do something in the playoffs. And so it's just easier to have the discussion that way. And unfortunately, some people are so emotional, and I think this is just way over the top emotional, that they're not even open to Harden on a 1 or 2 year deal. To me, that's just silly. I don't think there's any rational argument for being opposed to Harden on a super short-term deal that gives you all your flexibility, unless there's something I'm missing in terms of your options this summer, or some other superstar that could conceivably come in of his potential immediate impact. Unless there's something I'm missing based on the landscape as I know it, it's silly to be opposed to Harden, even on a super short-term team-friendly deal. Right. Yeah, yeah, so it's easy to sort of default to that because the people that are skeptical about him just sort of say, hey, what if he meets you halfway? Would you be open to this scenario? However, the reason that I am pro-Harden, have been throughout this process, again, I'm not going to say that he's Mr. Clutch, but I do still see him as an all-NBA player, and I do think the playoff arguments, I mean, I was just having them a couple of weeks ago when the Sixers were in round two, are extremely unfair. I've said this throughout his
but there's something
history.
To it, right?
No, like, a little bit, yes. Yeah, yeah. He is less consistent than his superstar peers. Guys that have been at his stature in this generation, the LeBrons, KDs, and Stephs, have not had the dips that James has had. However,
yeah, more specifically, though, like I feel like when... And I actually, like, after this year, I went back and I thought about, like, what the hell is going on? Like, because, like, I know off the top of my head, I know he's had great playoff games, including this year.
Yeah.
So I'm like, so what's going, what are these games where he, like, and great elimination games. Like, he's had great elimination games, right? So it's like, what elimination specifically is he having the issue with? And I think I've narrowed it down. I think it's when the wind gets, like, when momentum is no longer on his side.
Yes,
in a series.
Agree.
That's when James has the issues, right? That's when mentally it's like you know when the fan base is like, oh, I don't even want to watch Game 6. I kind of know what's going to happen. Like, he doesn't have that one superstar quality that Jimmy Butler has for example.
Fight through it.
Yes, to fight through it. Yes, exactly. That's the one thing I am now willing to accept. That's a weakness of his. And that said,
no, it is.
Yeah.
It's a weakness. My only point is that people cherry pick like crazy, and it's ridiculous. Let's use this year as an example. That game one, which was without Embiid, and game four were arguably the two best games played by any player in the playoffs this season. I think you could make that argument. He was transcendent, ridiculously good, even at 33 years old. And don't give me anything about, oh, what happened when there's a game seven. There is no game seven if you don't play out of your mind. When I say you, I'm talking about Harden, of course, in game one and game four. They all count the same. In game four, when they were down 2-1, and if they lose that game, down 3-1 going back to Boston, everybody knows it's over. That was an enormous amount of pressure. He faced it. He took on the challenge and came through in an incredibly high-pressure situation. So to then overlook it for the sake of the Game 7, that is 100% cherry-picking. And to some extent, it's been going on for a while. Really, ever since that 2017 Game 6 flameout against the Spurs, the infamous game where they lost by 40, there's been a desire to sort of highlight the bad games and then to say that the good ones, well, there just wasn't pressure, that they didn't mean anything, which is just nonsense. Every playoff game matters. It's ridiculous. I've had this discussion so many times with Matt Moore, HP Basketball on Twitter, about how, you know, it's unfortunate for the league's long-term health that people don't value the regular season enough. Holy crap, now we're talking about not even all playoff games mattering. Are you kidding me? Like, what is the point of being a fan if now it's not even about saying, oh, the regular season doesn't matter. Now you're trying to get people to say that only certain playoff games matter. That's ridiculous. Look, it's really hard to win a title. Only one team of 30. Sorry, we had a camera glitch there. Look, where I will acknowledge that your underlying premise is valid, there's a tendency on social media to think that it's just not worth the fight, that the emotionally charged, even if it's a minority, again, the vocal minority phenomenon, it's just not worth engaging on a point that they are this dug in on, especially when there's a way to avoid it. And in this case, when we're talking about James Harden, look, even if you're concerned about the playoff shortcomings and believe in these choker narratives, okay, well, everybody knows the Rockets aren't trying to win a championship the next 2 years anyway. So let's talk about, if you give him a short-term deal, would you be open to that? Which I do think is at least plausible. then you avoid the playoff conversation altogether, because everybody understands the Rockets are not trying to win a title the next 2 years. They're trying to get back to relevancy, use him as something of a bridge. But yeah, the reason I fight for him as hard as I do is I do still believe in him, certainly as an All-NBA type player, but also in the playoffs as well. Look, the game one and game four he had this year in Boston were transcendent. I think you could argue that those were the two best games, or at least among, I'd say, the top five, that any player in the NBA playoffs had in 2023. They were that good. They were transcendent. And there's no game seven to be had if he's not coming through under immense pressure. And it's so ridiculous. People act like, oh, there's no pressure. Are you kidding me? Down 2-1, the series, everybody knows, is over. If they lose that home game four to Boston, there's a ton of pressure. He came through late in regulation with the winning three late in overtime. He was phenomenal. And yes, there was a ton of pressure. I do agree that there are moments that, again, when things aren't going his way, he can sort of slump his shoulders and not fight through it. There's inconsistency to his playoff performances that the true top-of-the-line guys of his era, guys like LeBron and KD and Steph, for the most part, they're not as inconsistent. They don't have the lows, but the highs are extraordinary. It's not as simple as saying that, well, once the playoff lights are on, this guy becomes a different player. That's absolutely not true. He still has that elite gear, perhaps even more so in some games. You could definitely say, I think game one and game four were perhaps his best of the entire season, and they were under an immense amount of pressure, game one and game four against the Celtics, that is. So
I had a Sixers fan, by the way, I had a Sixers fan tell me that after game one, the entire Harden saga was worth it for him. Like, this was obviously in the moment, and I'm not sure if he still felt that way now if I asked him, but he told me, like, after game one, that entire Harden, like, whatever, everything they did, they went through with Harden, it was worth it because he bought them time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And again, just getting to that point in the playoffs, look, there's value to that as a fan. I mean, I can't stand this, you know, this championship or bust mentality in a league where 29 of 30 teams, 97% every year, are not going to win at all. I've had so many conversations with Matt Moore, HP Basketball, on Twitter about the importance of making the regular season matter. These Harden arguments make it to where not only does the regular season not matter, most playoff games don't matter. The only playoff games that matter are allegedly these elimination games. And again, in this case, you pointed out earlier, it's elimination games that they lose. People overlook elimination games that they've won. It's just cherry picking for the sake of a narrative. And so your underlying point that on some level it is a referendum of your belief in James Harden. Yeah, I think you're right on that, because underneath it all, yes, I do still believe in James. Maybe not at like a top five LeBron or Steph level, but as a very good all-NBA player, still top 25, I absolutely do believe in him. It's just, at least on social media, it's easier to have the conversations about short-term deals because we're not having to go through the nuance of this with people who are so emotionally charged about it. It's just easier to say, hey, if he does this deal for a year or two, then we don't even have to have the conversation about, well, is he going to flame out in the playoffs? Because no one's really expecting the Rockets to do anything in the playoffs those years anyway. So on some level, yeah, it is easier just to sort of have the conversations on social media about the short-term deals because it avoids the conflict of the larger debate. And yeah, the larger debate, look, I'm still largely with James. I think this year was quite encouraging. I know he, you know, had the issues in game seven, but look, that's a very good Boston team. And Philadelphia, with a hobbled Joel Embiid who didn't even play in game one, should not even have been in position to be that close. It's not like that was a perfect roster by any means. James Harden played well. And I do still believe in him. It's just on some level, yeah, you're right. That is the underlying dynamic. It just can be easier to sort of have a different discussion in our social media climate because that way focusing on the years, you know, it doesn't get as emotionally charged and contentious as if we're having the harder discussion.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I wanted to bring you on, Ben, to be honest, like, because you are very close to me on this. Like, I think I may be a little bit, like, I may still hold a greater belief because, like, again, less qualifiers there because of the, I don't think there's going to be that big of an issue in game four, but you're kind of with me. Like, in, like, if the Rockets sign Harden to a game four tomorrow, a four-year max tomorrow, like, you and I are not going to panic. Right, like, you maybe you're a little bit more concerned than I might be.
Yeah.
But like,
no, I wouldn't panic. there's a right, world yeah. where there's a world where it works out. Again, there's concern. It's not a given that he's going to be terrible by age 36 or 37. And who knows? Maybe Tillman Fertitta proves us wrong. I mean, he has had some personal, you know, economic success stories the last couple of years. Maybe Tillman Fertitta does turn into Steve Ballmer and says, F it, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to keep the young core together while paying James Harden. You know, me personally, I've got to see it to believe it, but theoretically it is possible. So, you know, I wouldn't panic if they give him a four-year deal. I wouldn't say I'm out on the rebuild. Rafael Stone, you don't know what you're doing. No, I wouldn't go there at all. I would just have some reservations. And that's why going into this, I would draw a bit harder of a line than you have. But even if that, you know, worst case scenario happens, no, I don't see it as something terrible. I'd still be excited to have James back. I'd just be excited with, you know, a bit more long-term concern than I would be if it's on a 2 or 3 year deal.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand. And like, you know what it is? I completely acknowledge like the idea of a cliff, right? Like the Kobe cliff, right? Like Kobe was 34 when he tore his Achilles. Harden is 34 right now, right? That's completely in play, especially the amount of miles he's logged.
Yeah.
Like he is among the top five in the NBA in minutes played, just period. So he, and the other guys are like LeBron, Kyle Lowry, Russell Westbrook, guys who have fallen off the cliff, right? Like, so I get it. I totally, and that risk of injury, like the Rockets will absolutely have to manage that. But I guess I'm confident that they're going to do so. That's part of it, right? Like I think they did some of that with Chris Paul, right? Like they managed that cliff with Chris Paul.
And also, by the way, just the way the roster is constructed, look, you've got other ball handlers, guys like Jalen Green, Kevin Porter Jr. We know there's a possibility they get a Mon Thompson or Scoot Henderson type out of this draft. Look, you could conceivably make Harden a 60-game player and give him, you know, maintenance games off, have games and stretches of games where, you know, maybe he's only playing 30, 32 minutes. Maybe he's playing off ball a little bit more. You know, people always talk about it in terms of, you know, are there too many cooks in the kitchen with regards to bringing in Harden on a team that already has these ball handlers and maybe you're adding another guard in the draft. Well, there's another way to look at it too. Maybe that makes it easier to sort of navigate the middle to late 30s of James Harden's career and load manage him a bit to where you don't have his Achilles blow the way Kobe's did.
I mean, this is a coach in Ime Udoka who was there for the Manu years, right? Like he saw Pop manage this, right? With all those guys, not just Manu, but like Tim with Tony, like all those guys as they got to the late, like, so you would think there might be some institutional knowledge that he carries with him about preventing that injury, you know, those cliffs, right? That we just talked about. And, you know, like, that's the risk, right? The obvious risk is the cliff. The reward in a well-aging Harden to me is worth it. That's kind of where, like, if he doesn't hit the cliff, that's the reward. And you're talking about an age four where I think he'd be largely still worth the contract, which is insane to think about, but I do think he is skilled enough, right? Like, amazing passer, that's never going to go away. Good shooter, that's never going to go away. Maybe the first step goes away. Maybe it fades a little bit, but you know, so these smart guards, they find ways to still be effective when they lose that first step. They get mid-range jumpers, and Harden's starting to incorporate that into his game, which makes me excited and more optimistic that he can, you know, age more gracefully because he's adding that mid-range jumper back in. So maybe he's not getting all the way to the basket as much, but maybe he stops and on a dime and shoots a mid-range jumper like Chris Paul did to manage his aging process.
Yeah. And my larger point on Harden, how many conversations have we had the last couple of years with this Rockets rebuild about culture and effort and the day-to-day environment with these younger players? There's been so many just full-fledged meltdowns and freakouts on social media about not just the day-to-day, but the organization as a whole. Do they have enough adults in the room? Do they know what they're doing? The value of bringing in James Harden and having instant credibility and relevance and what that means for the development of your young guys like Jalen and Jabari and LP, I don't think that can be overstated. It is absolutely astonishing to me. And this is where I think there's a bit of an, you know, emotional charge to it with people just being opposed to Harden just because, you know, they feel jilted over how he left. I'm not saying that it's a seamless X's and O's fit, But any questions about how exactly does the offense run and how many minutes does so-and-so get to be the hub, those pale in comparison to the developmental benefits of actually mattering, of having a day-to-day environment where guys get to the gym and feel like that game matters, that there's a reason to play, that fans in the arena actually give a shit and believe and care about this team. I am stunned after the last 2 years at how many people seem to think that all they got to do is just keep rolling out young guys year after year, add in a couple more role players. By the way, as I mentioned earlier, you already got some pretty decent ones, guys like Jayshon Tate, KJ Martin. Just add a couple more of that tier, and then instantly it's going to click. No, there is a risk if you just add young player after young player of eventually getting in, you know, a Kings or Timberwolves perpetual rebuild cycle, or the Knicks for that matter. Not saying it's for sure going to happen, but there is a risk.
Most of the time, there is a bridge to that next stage.
Yeah.
Right? Like unless you're drafting a transcendent talent that gets you there right away, which, yeah. I like all these young players. I don't think they've drafted a transcendent talent, right? Unless you're drafting that guy, I think you're more likely to make the jump after signing a star.
Yeah.
You just look at the NBA, like the Celtics made a jump after signing a star.
Yeah.
The Suns made a jump after trading for a star. Like it usually happens after you make a free agency move.
Yeah. But look, the bottom line for me, it's just any questions with regards to scheme or specific X's and O's fit pale in comparison to the benefits of being guaranteed relevant. And to put these young guys into an environment that you know is going to be competitive and is going to bring the best out of them from a competitive standpoint on a day-to-day basis. I'm surprised at how many people seem to be willing to, and I'm not trying to make this a shot at Ime Udoka, who I think was a very good hire, but there's lots of good coaches in the NBA. Even if Udoka is a top 5 or top 10 coach, I don't think that just adding him to the young core from the last couple of years is going to magically do something different. I think there's people that are drinking the Kool-Aid a bit too much about just what a coach can do. Stephen Silas is not an idiot. I don't think he's a great coach by any means, but he inherited a bad situation. There's a reason why it was as ugly as it was the last couple of years. I think Ime is a better coach, but I don't think it's so night and day that, well, you bring in Ime and just have the same cast of characters, add in a couple more first-round picks, and all of a sudden, just snap your fingers, this team is going to be dramatically different. No, some of it just comes down to the players on the floor, and is there a straw to stir the drink, that central force? And again, it doesn't have to be James Harden. I'm open to arguments for being another guy, but as I said leading off the pod, just tell me who that guy is. I'm not willing to say abstractly, well, if it's not Harden, let's just sort of, you know, sign some short-term role players and keep flexibility open. Tell me who that player is actually going to be. Tell me when you're going to make that deal. Don't just, you know, hope that something's going to magically appear, because even if a guy does come available, what are the chances he's going to be open to a rebuild like what the Rockets currently are, the way that James is according to these reports? Again, it's not so much that it has to be James. I'm open to other ideas, but tell me who that is. Because in my opinion, without a straw that stirs the drink, even with a coaching change, there's risk to this not taking the jump that it needs to take.
Yeah. And, you know, generally I am pretty I'm not very receptive to people who are just out on James flat out. Right, we're not gonna really have a great conversation. Like, but the one instance where I can have the conversation with the person is if they name me that guy. If they say
yes,
James will get in the way of X player's development, and this guy can be that guy. It's like, okay, well then I'm more willing to be like, okay, yeah, I can see that. I can see where that's coming from. Now, do I believe it myself? No, I think it's better to just. To just guarantee yourself the guy, and if you have another guy on your roster, it's better. It's just better, right? It's not necessarily a negative. Like, it's gonna help your the developmental stuff. And you mentioned like the all the extraneous like benefits, right? Like the players mattering, like players feeling like something matters, fans having something that matters to watch. there's also transactional benefits, like real tangible transactional benefits, in that the Rockets do not have a ton of leverage when trying to make trades right now because their assets aren't being displayed in the most optimal way. Right? Like if you're on a, if it's just a fact that players that are on good teams tend to draw more value when you make trades, right? Like you're more likely to get a first round pick from a player that's proven that he can contribute to a winner. Right? Like the reason the Rockets were able to get anything for Eric Gordon is because he's proven that he's been able to contribute to a winner. Right. Otherwise, if that never happened at any point in his career, it wouldn't have been able to. Like KJ Martin. KJ Martin is a guy I think has pretty good value, but it's hard to prove that definitively without him contributing to a winner. Right.
Yeah.
Now, if the team is winning, like all these guys look better and you can more easily like have leverage around the league to do stuff. Right. So like there's that element of this stuff.
No, I was just going to say, above all else, I also think there's sort of a fundamental misunderstanding of the role of free agency. For the most part, it's about plugging in the gaps. In terms of actually building a sustainable contender, which is what the Rockets are trying to do, it's draft and trades. Because, number one, I mean, there's a reason they bottomed out the last 3 years and gotten these three consecutive top four draft picks. You hope that one or more of those hit at an alpha level, a guy who can be the engine on a championship level team. So you hope that you hit on some of your high draft picks and those pan out. But beyond that, if you don't get a guy that way, the odds are very likely that you're going to have to do it by trade, because in the modern NBA, it's just too risky for a team to let one of those legit engine types reach unrestricted free agency. They're going to push for a resolution a year or two before their contract is up. And if they're not willing to extend, if they don't feel good about things staying the course, then they're going to trade a guy at that time to get maximum value. And so in terms of the Rockets, look, again, I'm just not that concerned about their ability to get quality role players. What I'm concerned about is getting the true upper echelon talent. And whether you sign James Harden or don't, I don't really see it as that prohibitive to your ability to do that down the line. I think your ability to do that down the line is going to be much more about trades. And of course, you need to have draft capital, which they do. Again, we're not talking about giving up draft capital to bring James in. We're talking about signing him. And two, you need to have matching salaries. And I think they're going to do that. They've got Kevin Porter Jr. They've got Jae'Sean Tate. You're going to have, even if James isn't the matching salary, you're going to have other guys who signed this summer. I think you're going to be able to be in the ballgame for, you know, any star that declares a crazy situation in the future. You can do that. And so, for me, it's sort of like, if the Rockets don't have the right guys internally, if these guys, Jalen, Jabari, Şengün, whoever they draft it for, don't become the alphas, then in my world, they're almost 90% plus going to have to either A, bottom out again, and then it's the draft, or B, trade for a guy of that stature. They're probably not going to do it in unrestricted free agency. So I think some people are opposed to Harden under this misguided notion that, well, you can just roll over your flexibility, and 1 year the stars are going to align, and you're going to get, you know, Giannis or Jokic to walk into your cap space. That's not how it's going to work. So I think if you look at it as draft and trades, then it makes sense to use on Harden. Again, it's an easier rotation fit because you already got a sort of a crowded rotation as it is to fit into next year. And then also it's improving, A, the chances of the drafted guys developing, and B, even if they don't become a contender just organically, then just by helping their development, you're helping your trade assets down the line by making them look more viable, as you were just saying. So I just think that in general, if you look at it as draft and trades to get the guys that the Rockets need to get, in my opinion, Harden helps on both of those fronts. The only way that Harden really hurts you is that obviously it means you won't have a ton of cap space in the next few years, but I just don't think that's really going to be the ticket to get you to that championship level, even if you had it. So to me, that's just not that much of a cost.
Yeah, like I just think it's just in terms of pursuing Harden, it's a no-brainer. In terms of the 4-year deal, it's not a no-brainer, and that's what this podcast is for, right? Yeah. Like I feel like I've been having this conversation wrong the entire time. Like I like the framing of this conversation much better than the conversations I've had the entire summer, because it really is like that belief, right? That belief in James, that belief in, you know, what those third and fourth years are going to look like, projecting out. and what's happened with him in the past, and like how is that coloring everything in? Like, I think that's really what this is about, and we've kind of just talked around it, right?
Yeah.
And I'm glad we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah, I think we got to the heart of the matter on this.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on, Ben. Please let the people know where they can read your work, follow you on Twitter, podcast, anything.
Yep. Ben Dubose on Twitter, The Rockets Wire on Twitter, The Logger Line on Twitter, and rocketswire.usatoday.com for all of your daily Houston Rockets news coverage.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Absolutely.